I see that we've almost got a full house, what with an alternate member present as well. We have a member, am I correct, from the Freedom Front? I'm not too certain, colleague.
Yes, Madam Chair, I'm actually a full member. I mean, I've replaced Mr. Willie Spies. He used to be a member here as well.
And it's most unfortunate that I'm not that good with names, and as I don't have a list of names here, but I know that you have a doctorate. That's about all I know.
I actually have a legal background, a master's highest degree, but I'm admitted as an advocate. That's right, yeah. Anton Albert.
Well, I hope we will see you at least for 2 days before we complete reports, so that you're part of the winding up, the adoption process itself, and you can make the input of your own political party at the same time. But most certainly, what we're looking at here is 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Is that right? And myself, 8 members present. And is it 9? With Mr. Moran. So, Honourable Comrade Rip, it would seem as if we have a full meeting again. And you said this to me the other day, that it is for you and for all of us a very positive sign of how the committee is working together effectively, that we can achieve a quorum so frequently these days. And I think that is thanks to yourself. And of course also our committee staff and so on, but I would certainly like to thank you personally for ensuring that the membership is here as well. Thank you very much. We decided that, we have got some bad news, good news, bad news, and the rest. Maybe we should start with the bad news first. We worked very hard to bring the Industrial Policy Action Plan to a conclusion, our hearings and our report. And we are, in fact, concluding it. And the reason for that is we took a decision, a strategic decision, to have a debate on Tuesday, the 1st of June. You may not have been present at the time, Honourable Albert, but that was keeping in mind that this would be the flagship of our portfolio committee, and we wanted to do it before the World Cup. Do you remember all of the reasons we took for that? Now, yesterday, I think it was yesterday, so much has happened in just 16 or 20 hours that it's difficult to recall. But I do think it was yesterday when the whip and myself learned that there was a change in the program for 3 reasons. The one was that, of course, Union Day comes to an end with the month of May, the actual, the legal coming together of the territories that made up what is still now the Republic of South Africa and what had become the Union of South Africa at that particular time. And that there was a debate on this, perhaps to take us through from what was a difficult period, all of the discrimination and racism, to what was then a constitutional democracy now, as it were. And that that debate would take precedence over any other debate. And I think given the circumstances, we must respect that decision, because it is not something you can hold after the World Cup. Do you follow? It's one of these things which I believe all parties have agreed to in this regard, and welcomed, in fact. It meant then that there was a possibility of us still being there, but you can imagine trying to compete with. It was also something to do with women and children, then the union. How much coverage do you think we would get? Very limited. because the paper is just so big, and the media. And our purpose of holding it before was that we would get maximum coverage at that particular point in time, and we've now lost that. So the Whip and I were, we did everything we could to change this. We were not successful, but also we have since come to accept that probably strategically it may be better for us to come after the World Cup, after people have stopped blowing the vuvuzelas. So, you know, and come to the very serious matter of unemployment, acceleration of the industry, etc. So that is bad news, but possibly it can also be good news. There's an opportunity to exploit. However, we also took the decision, the Whip and myself, and we hope you will agree on that as well, that it's important before it gets stale to adopt the report. Having adopted the report, it assumes a different status, a higher status. This is a report adopted by a committee, no matter what else you want to say. And therefore, you can speak to that report in the constituency, if you like, and wherever. And then you would come back on the 18th of July or whenever, am I right, Honourable Whip, and you would then hold a substantive debate. And the Whip was very effective in obtaining a trade-off there, where instead of getting an hour on the 1st, he managed to squeeze out an hour and a half. He asked for two, and we may still get the two, but certainly 1.5 hours. So there's, you know, there are pros and cons along the way. There's the opportunity even for smaller parties, and I'm not talking of the DA per se, but our smaller parties that are here, PAC and the, you know, the Freedom Front, to get that extra opportunity, time to contribute here. So having indicated what those reasons were, we said, let us close it today so that tomorrow morning we adopt what for the first time will be a clean report. That you get here and you're not told every 5 minutes the chair will add this, the content specialist will add that. You will get the report you have adopted, because we will adopt at that moment with minor semantic changes, which is supposed to be the way the process is run in Parliament, as we are all aware, and not with a document that comes out 2 pages longer with what people may have said and nuances that may not be properly captured. I'm assured by the IFP that notwithstanding the lack of their presence, they have made their input yesterday. And I'm looking at the Whip even as I say that. I'm not aware that PAC has made their input yet, but they may have made their input. I am aware the DA has, I'm aware the ANC has, and it may be that the Freedom Front will add to the document today. So, having said that, I would now, I'm not going to do what I've normally done, go on what I call a line for line, but rather we've had this report very much as it is for some time, and we are going to go page by page. At the end of all of that, you're then going to say, I don't like the bullets, I think it should be done this way stylistically. In other words, we will tackle style loss. We will tackle semantics lost. We are dealing now with substantive issues. So before I begin, are there any questions and different opinions and so on? Honourable Maria.
Madam Chair, no. You know, I think we've put in a lot of work, so hopefully we will not, you know, redo the report now. A further request of mine will be that, you know, if we can finish this report tonight, why do we have to come back tomorrow? You know, I mean, I think some might, you know, appreciate the fact that they can, you know, you can leave earlier. And I don't have to drive a couple of hours in just for an hour just to come and say yes. So let's try to finish it tonight.
On the mother Barton?
No, I would also second Honorable Murray and say we have been dealing with this report a number of times. So let's put our minds to it and try to finish it tonight. Thanks. And adopt it tonight.
Certainly the Chief Whip and the Whip and myself were of that opinion, but we've also been made aware from the trade report that not everyone was very happy at not having, as it were, the final copy before them. But if we're now all very happy with that, because after all it's the committee, if everyone is happy that we may be in a position to adopt it tonight, let's adopt it. Any objections?
No.
Great. Let's move. We are going to capture in, what is it, in red or whatever, you know, overhead. And I would strongly urge you to try and capture it yourselves, although tomorrow you will then get it. Right, let's go. It is now probably 4:30. I have no idea. What is it? 20 past. So we, page one, we then have, I think the first paragraph is always highly important. So that's probably one of the few that I will read out. The Revised Industrial Policy Action Plan, I wrote across here, please don't put here an after, just put IPEP 2 in brackets. Is a radical shift to grow a developmental economy by taking a deliberate decision to ensure that investment targets, that investment targets productive sectors of the economy to arrest the decline in manufacturing and accelerate employment creation. IPEP 2 clearly is an attempt by government to arrest industrial decline and place South Africa on a new growth path. Within the context of a new growth path, IPEP 2 focuses on value-added sectors with the potential for high employment creation and growth multipliers. The only question you have to ask yourself, does that capture the essence? Everyone nods. We move on. I'm no longer going to read it now line by line. If everyone's happy. We have low productivity levels in bold. Please explain, Ms. Hurling.
And employment is also
in both.
It's two comments which Mr. Maria has noted, and we need to. It's two comments which Mr. Maria has noted, and whether or not we need to include it.
You can see we're very transparent in the committee. We note immediately any extras. Does anyone have a problem? No. Right. We then bullet the issues. You then have low productivity levels. Somebody has added that, no problem. Right. We're moving and let your hand shoots up. All right. Policy context. Right. All of this is much the same as we had, and the whip also assured me of that. You know, I'm going to just put something to you with a question and don't answer it now. Keep it in mind. You remember we've been referring to labor absorption. You remember that? Am I right or wrong? Labor absorption. Yeah. Keep that in mind and then remember labor intensive. Okay, And we're not asking you for your opinion now, but just want you to flag it in your mind. We then move across to number 2, page 2, and move beyond that. I see no blue. I'm relying on the secretariat to have properly noted the footnotes this time, properly. And we move to process. I often feel that the process is something the secretariat is responsible for unless we see a glaring error. I did say to someone informally that I am deeply concerned that Eskom, after a month, has not responded. And I'm putting that on record here. I've asked the secretariat, it makes us very difficult, you see, Honourable Maria, to adopt something when you're going to be saying to us here, the secretariat and the chair, we'll rely on you to factor it in. To factor what in when I haven't received it? How do we factor it in? Don't know. So, Honourable Hadid.
I think Comrade Chairperson is correct that the ESCOM has failed us up to this point. But I don't think that we can delay the adoption of this report because of them. I think that it must be noted somewhere in the report that they have failed us. Whatever they are going to present, it will come as an annex to this report.
Yes.
I think that's how we can cover ourselves up.
Does everyone follow that and agree?
A question from the chair. Shouldn't we just say we submit the report as is, and if those submissions come late when we have already submitted the report, I think we don't have to make it an annex. Because, I mean, there has been reasonable communication.
In retrospect, I think I agree with that because I mean I think we have done everything from our side to include that, and if there's other parties as well that didn't submit, then you know, then we can only act on what we've got.
You know, before the ALC responds, I would like to just say something. I actually think that we need to make a statement about this, really. You see, this is not a small little SMME father shop co-op issue here.
Oh,
and we're saying it's in a...
Why? I want you to take exception. That's one step. A cooperative may be a giant industry that can reduce poverty extremely in the whole of South Africa. So a cooperative is a giant.
No, it is not a giant. It can be a giant. It is not a giant. It can be a giant. So without belaboring the point, I suppose colloquially, I was saying anecdotally, that, you know, when one looks at this, very often we can make an excuse for a smaller operation, not an operation of this size. And, you know, we don't want in the main report to be belaboring the point we asked. You're then going to misdirect all the points made in the report. But in the annexure, it needs to be included as having arrived 5 weeks after the request or whatever. And in the main body of the report, you simply note that Eskom spoke to IPAP 1, the first one, and the committee were unable to interrogate its responses to IPAP 2, but it is attached in the annexure, and it will be reviewed in the next term or session or whatever. So I think you want the public to be aware of it, But at the same time, you must make the public aware of the status of the document. And at the same time, you need to make a criticism that this is no longer acceptable. And I think that we do need to make those points. Honourable Whip.
Honourable Chairperson, I will not agree with you more on that further aspect. Because why, when coming to this infrastructure spend, ESCOM is having a huge slide, so we cannot ignore it. If it was something small somewhere, we could ignore that. But I think that by the effort that we put as an annex on the side, it will be an indictment to them that they are not taking the South African public seriously about the issues which involve them.
Can we leave that alone now? And I look around at members. I don't see a serious objection to that, do I? No. Can we then move? That's the process. You see, that fell under process at that particular point. Key issues raised in submissions. Is there anything we have overlooked, Honourable Mabu?
Inequities, Convict Chair. I don't know whether we should put it in the positive and say to close the gap between, but that's the inequities. If somebody can help, that we create on page 2 key issues. Thanks, Commissioner.
No, I was also looking for what it was, and you're asking it to come under the bullets. Was that what you were referring to? Raised in submissions, we raised the issue of inequity. Is everyone in agreement on that particular issue? You see, what the point being made is that as we were engaging, deliberating, and whatever, not necessarily in the submission, but what we were saying, we are alerted to the fact that it may have been said. What about the inequities? How are we going to deal with it? We're not saying it was in the submissions, but how were we engaging? Yes, Honourable Hajjaj.
Thank you, Chair. I think that would come under 4.1.1, the structural imbalance of the economy. Because I think there the section of inequities could be there.
Are you saying there's a possibility of us saying employment creation and inequities in the economy, or not?
I think we can. We don't have to put it under under 4, but we can add it on 4.1.1, where you talk about structural imbalance of the economy.
Okay.
So then we can. Actually
expand on the inequity. Zero, I think it's focused. Maybe you can't even add it there. Now, I don't think we're having an objection. Let's try and capture it. Honourable Mabasa.
No. That's very appropriate, but it's appropriate as a follow-up point where we expand. But here it is the listing, so that if somebody throws eyes on one to what was on to issue listed. So I propose that we still list it here, but we then expand under 4.1.
Do we want to expand on the word just simply say inequities, or do we not want to say inequities and what? Inequities in the employment structure or in the economic structure, or do we want to leave it as a bold inequities? Because all I'm worried about, if we say inequities, it's hanging. Quick, somebody, come with some help. Honourable Mabu.
Now, I've been
advised, Honourable Mabasa, in the interest of time, to request you to develop a little phrase, and we'll come back to it in just three pages. Right. So if you would occupy just a little bit of the time there, and then we move on to page 3, which we are already on in one sense of the word. But of course, you then have export-driven objectives of something new. You see that?
Madam Chair, that was part of my input, because as I recollected as well, part of the key issues that was raised was that we must be more competitive on the export market. So, in other words, you know, production and export and earning foreign currency, and then you know, us in this global village. So that is the 2 points that I just added there that I recollected that was of the key issues that was discussed.
Thank you very much, Honourable Marie. Somebody else had a hand up. Honourable Njik.
Chairperson, I'd like to interrogate the word objective. Now, we say export-driven objective. Can you satisfy ourselves? How does that mean, and how does this relate to the overall thrust of the key issues? To me, the uneasiness, Chair, is that if you say export-driven objective, would that imply that they are a component of the thrust of EPUB, or by saying export-driven objectives, we mean that becomes the base of EPUB?
Madam Chair, I must admit I don't understand. I don't understand the point, because I mean you can use another phrase, the goal, of, you know, you can target, you can whatever you can put it, but what came out was that you know, there must be an export, a drive to export products, you know, our products abroad. So, you know, use another word for objective, but
I'll make my own comment later. Look, rather, let me hear a little bit more. Honourable Khadebi, Honourable Hajjaj.
Okay. Thank you, Comrade Chairperson. When that issue was dealt with, it is that when we are making production, it is an industrial product. We must produce for that the economy must be self-sufficient, so that the excess is exported. Yeah. I think that. So I don't know whether when we say that the bullet before that spoke about the developmental trade policy will not cover that. Ne? But that's what we're speaking about. Ne? That we produce enough for the economy, for the consumption within the economy, but for the excess so that we can earn foreign currency. That was the gist of what you asked about on that element.
We may be getting a better understanding of where we're going, but let me just get other points as well, Honourable Hajjaj.
I think what we're trying to do here is find a balance. Balance in the sense that, you know, it's not clearly what I'm saying.
Your mic is on, but you're not talking.
I think we're trying to find a balance here, in the sense that we want to produce goods for the export market to get in foreign exchange. On the other hand, also, we need to manufacture goods, so we reduce our imports. So we need to find a balance there. But I think here, it says on paragraph 3, I think this paragraph is a bit clumsy. The rationale behind IFRS 2 is a promotion, stroke expansion of the productive sectors in the economy, particularly those with high employment and or economic growth potential that could compete in export markets. That's fine. And I think promote local manufacturing. And then I don't know how to put in that, because if you promote local manufacturing, we are in fact curbing imports. So we either need to delete that against imports. I don't think that it actually sounds
I think it sounds a bit aggressive also against imports. We rather deport them and say we need to promote local manufacturing. We want it for our own market, for domestic market, and for the export market. So I think we need to draw that balance. Because I think this is one of the things that, for a time, the economic growth was skewed only towards producing goods for the export, for the export, for export. And as important as it is, it's not only that. We need to produce stuff for South Africa and the region because there is a market. That is to curb imports from coming in. Thank you.
What you're saying, some of you will recall that in the trade policy comments we made, we noted, for example, that with respect to Europe, I mean, as our biggest market, you know, the 40% in terms of what we of trade, etc., we import 40, they export 40, we import and what do we export, 30 or 20 or something. Now, one of the points that were made there is that it's the value adding that's the issue. When Europe exports to us, it doesn't export raw materials per se. It exports value added goods, if I can put it that way. But when we export to Europe, largely speaking, we haven't added value. Now, we're not saying don't trade with Europe, but isn't it time we also added value? And it may be of interest to you to note that in the recent South African-European Union engagement which we had, which the major parties played a key role recently in the last 2 days, they once again re-emphasized they would welcome if South Africa also added value, so that we could, I think Honorable Njikalana was there at that point, so that we can begin to restore some of the balance that is there. So it is an imbalance that we need to restore. So it's not so much to be almost aggressive in it, but what you're capturing now, grow the domestic market, grow it, expand it. Yes. Add value to what you export. Don't just export raw stuff. So we don't want to get lost now and start a whole debate. Come back to the point made here. Export-driven. Is it an export-driven objective, or is it that we're going to grow the domestic market and compete? You know, Honourable Maria, earlier on you spoke about the competitiveness that is important. We're not competing effectively on the import-export stage in Europe, for example. We're competing with raw materials. We're not even competing, you know. It's a misalignment. So I'm going to give you the opportunity to come and last there, Honourable Maria, but let's get Honourable Khadebe to put a final word in from one side.
All right, thank you, Chair. What about it? Removing that to export and say manufacture for export. Manufacture for export, or manufacture for local consumption and export. And that's, then we've covered it well. Manufacture for local consumption and export. That's it. Because when we say export driven, so this industrial policy now will also be driven by the trade policy, whereas one is
the sequence.
Right. Yeah, that will be more substantive. Yeah.
Madam Chair, Honorable Khadebe said, I think, you know, is basically what you were trying to say. The moment that you add things like value added, then you must also stop vehicle manufacturing as well, because we don't add value, we import all the components. You know, then we must stop that as well. So, yeah. But the point was quite clearly made that, you know, we cannot only be an economy for self-sufficiency. You know, if you only look at yourself, then you grow inwards, and you have to possible, and later on it is mentioned in the report of possible import substitution. So that emphasizes that, but you cannot exclude exports, because that is only the way that you can grow your economy in the world and in the region.
All right, we're not going to go on and on about the point. Let me say that we'll flag it if people feel, well, look, they're not entirely happy. Is everyone happy?
All right.
I see no one dissenting, so can we move to global and regional integration?
Yes, Honourable Kennedy. Sure, on the page 3, on the bullet, it is of the two bullets which are bold. I think, Chairperson, the issue of global land must be removed, because I think what we emphasize regional integration and competitiveness, whereby we are going to leverage the regional resources. Because really, if we say global competitiveness, we emphasize the regional integration, because we spoke that there's certain...
As you're talking, why, and of course I'm going to come back to Honourable Maria's point, this is, you're agreeing, well, no, look, it's regional integration and competitiveness, okay. My question is, as you talk, why regional integration and competitiveness? You've already got competition policy above. What do you actually say? Or what would you agree with?
What we're dealing with is that there are certain resources which you don't have as a country. That's why we made an example of water, which you'll find in DRC. You'll find a lot of water in Uganda. But when you produce when you come with this industrial strategy, you must also consider the inputs which should come from within the region to become competitive regionally. That's why we can deal with this issue. That's like certain components can be made, let's say, in Botswana instead of here in South Africa, come as input for our industrial study.
Right. I can understand now why you are agreeing with it as such, as you see it holistically there. Right. Honourable Maria, do you want to come in last, seeing as it's the point you made before, after Honourable Hajjaj?
Just very quickly, Chair, I would say that last bullet perhaps we should just say regional integration and global competitiveness.
Honourable Maria?
We're then able to take the entire page, you know, because as I said, we're only focusing on some of the changes.
All right. Can you go up higher again when you see the change in red? That is what our content specialist is leaving in. Now, is that what we are agreeing on?
Yeah.
Fine. Let's move then to page 4. What does it mean when we have red and blue? Especially as I said, sufficient with an S in red. Right, the blue should be from furthermore the committee stressed. That should all be blue. That is the part that secretariat, chair, whip, or whatever added. The red is what you yourself would have put in, Honourable Maria, or words to that. No. Oh, the opposite. You put in the blue then, and we added in the red from the report as a committee.
The blue was in the original document that we got. There was a said in question: is IPAP too well or sufficiently resourced? So my in blue was a response to that, and that was sufficient funds, you know, are required to support IPAP 3, but we've got budgetary constraints, and you know maybe one should go and reconsider how you optimally can use the funds. So that was the objective, and it was a response to that question that was basically there.
Are you happy then with how it's been captured? And then the red. So
Honourable Jikalama?
Yes, Chair, I'm fine with what you've been said. If you could just go in more or less in the middle of the red, if not last. Or say your last slide, which is in this regard the promotion and development of manufacturing sector and encouragement of knowledge-based technologies will contribute to the elimination of poverty and unemployment, which is fine, Chair. But unless I may have missed it, at the inclusion of this vaccine. Unless I may have missed it at the inclusion of this section, my query is the selection of only two sections, that is manufacturing sector and knowledge-based technology. Should it be only those two sectors that I mentioned as eliminating poverty and unemployment?
I hear what you're saying. I certainly think manufacturing sector is there, in, you know, and we would probably all agree with. Perhaps if we were to talk about the next part, and maybe that's what you want to focus on, Honourable Khadebe. And encouragement. You see, let's look at it holistically. In this regard, you're talking about unacceptable high levels of inequality, etc., the redistribution of wealth, the creation of economic opportunities, including the creation of sustainable jobs and maintenance, etc. In this regard, the promotion and development of the manufacturing sector, which is very broad, low skilled, you know, high skilled, all over. And apart from that low, high, medium, you're then adding in something. Yes, Honourable Khadeb.
Honourable Chair, when we put the issue of knowledge-based technology, was the issue of the creation of decent work. Because you like it or not, when coming to the issue of decent work, you are going to only get it from the people who have got this land of knowledge-based technology. It can be the engineers, it can be the nuclear engineers, the economists. So that's what we wanted to emphasize, so that we don't only emphasize the lower part, so that it can be the whole spectrum. Yeah.
Now, I think, you know, I think this is what we ought to remember. If people are asking the question here in the committee where we've been with it, it'll be important in debate to be flagging this and to say, hey, now, let me just make a point that when I get in the debate, make sure that this is clearly understood. So I think as we move along, all of us ought to be flagging these parts that we ourselves want clarification on. So we let that go and we move. And as I move, because we've got like 35 pages, Honourable Hajjaj.
The housing inequality in our society, that's fine. And it can be a catalyst in the redistribution of wealth and everything else. Somewhere in that sentence, I think perhaps just after the redistribution of wealth, perhaps you can put in the whole concept of training and skilling. because this whole effect too, I think, is important in terms of skills transfer and the training, because without training and skilling, how do we actually create sustainable jobs and provide economic opportunities? So somehow we need to put that in.
All right. Look, I'm going to throw it back to you and say what I said to the Honourable Mabasa. Put something together.
Yeah.
I'm going to go back to him quickly, Honourable Mabasa. Remember we asked you if you could just pull something together there, a phrase? Yeah, have you got the phrase?
Not yet, because
I'm... No, that's fine. We'll come back. We're still here a long time. Honourable Hajjaj, can you put together a sentence or a phrase? Right. Can we move to page 5? As you see, we are growing all the time and skilling ourselves and developing a more cohesive report that captures some graphs. Well, I think most people have a clear idea that there's a line above and below the waterline, as it were, you know. And I think it's always useful, as we all learned when we were studying and one thing and another, when we talk about the figure 1, explain your graph. And then as you explain your graph, you would say, clearly, you've got your employment subject. What is the relationship? And just 2 sentences. So if someone, you each look, it's pointless looking at each other. You've got to do it. Yeah. No, no, no. Don't even look at each other. So you will be doing this. Yeah. Honourable Hajjaj.
On the second line, it says high levels of inequality prevail in society. And that can be a catalyst for the redistribution of wealth, comma.
Page 4,
second paragraph, 3rd line.
There can be a
catalyst for the redistribution of wealth, for comprehensive training, comma, skills transfer. For the creation, the elite, and for the creation of economic opportunities, and we carry on.
Yeah. All right.
The point is captured. We'll clean up the semantics, okay? So let's not belabor and waste our time. Thank you very much, Honourable Hajjaj. On page 6. We're not remaining there. We have already dealt extensively with page 6. We move on. Yeah? I mean, we care about this, are we? Oliver, colleague. Right. 7. Red. And where is Honourable Maria now that the red flag is raised? Is this the committee?
Committee,
yes. Right. The committee agrees. Watch what you're agreeing to. Is everyone agreed? Do I see anyone having a different view? Honourable Elvis, are you also watching what you've agreed to? Right. We move on to page 8. I have explained or requested to our committee support staff here that we need to ensure that they fly this by someone who doesn't know any economics and see whether they understand it. Not those of us who've done some economics. You give it to someone, and then you say, read this, a change in the repo rate. I'm sure most of South Africa never heard of it. But make sure what's in here, in the body, people understand. Otherwise, you put it to the back, in an annexure, and you put an explanation here. Do we agree on the principle? So we're not saying throw it out now. If in fact a clarification is done in such a manner that the ordinary person can understand it, it's safe. Otherwise, it's in the annexes. with a little paragraph. But we would like to keep the theme quite clearly because it's a critical part of a report. It's a very important part. Page 9, the same point.
Madam Chair, can I just, I'll just slip one thing, and that's more a technical thing, ISCOR.
Where did you go?
The abbreviation on page 5, ISCOR, in English is not a K but a T. Iron Steel Corporation.
Yes, of course. I suppose we've become so sort of flexi-lingual now.
ESCOM is correct because that is how we know ESCOM with a K.
I realise that, but it's amazing how you one lets things slip because you recognise the Afrikaans unwittingly as English. Page 9, again the same point. Explain the graph as if you were writing your matric exam. What does it mean? We're here. Well, you see, this is what I've complained about before. Figure 2 below. Sometimes it's better to have these things closer, and that's what we need to deal with on a secretarial level. Secretariat. Page 10. This is the way we ought to be moving, yes.
Just make the comment that in terms of that figure 2, you know, the way that it has been put there, I think is quite correct, where it says on the bottom of page 8, figure 2 below indicates a relation, da 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 da, and then you get to the graph, and I think that is also in academic language, that is the way and the format that it must be done, so I don't think there's any problem with that.
Certainly no problem for those of us who've got degrees. But I think the point I'm trying to make, when we do reports, make sure they're accessible to a wider grouping of people. And when you print something on the ATC, you see, Honourable Marie, very often it cuts these things at the wrong point. And in the past, we've requested for a page, a page break. That's what we say. So that you capture it as one and read it as one, as it were. Because when you study a new concept or read a new concept with which you're not familiar with, we are familiar with it. There are many who aren't, sitting in our own house. And I really mean that. So let's make our reports accessible. The other points here, you've got... In the past, some of the reports have noted a list, although you've got these things in brackets, like the real effective exchange rate, and you've got the abbreviation, won't you please, at the end of the report, note every abbreviation alphabetically with the abbreviation, just as a further help. I don't think we have to stay there. You can always stop me any way along the line. You know, please don't hesitate. Page 11.
Yeah. On page 9, I've seen there at the bottom, in brackets, is this explicit? I presume that is a question for clarity.
No, it should be. No, look, Honourable Marie, you know, some of these things, they shouldn't be there. You're quite right. They should have already been removed. I think they're removed now on a laptop, but not in our copy, but thanks. Who did green? Who's green? I'm now told that was me. Well, just this. And the red is the committee, as always. Let me refresh my memory before I choose to defend it. It welcomes, let's see, the committee is of the view that the issues of the volatility, not of the, of volatility, well I suppose you could say of the volatility of the exchange rate, comma, the interest rate and the impact on the manufacturing sector, should be addressed at the highest level of government. I put this in, it welcomed, that's the committee, the minister's response, that there is a sustained and serious engagement. It simply underpins where this may have come from, so I really don't think it's a substantive issue. Can we move to... Honourable Mabasa, have you got the phrase, Honourable Mabasa?
Not on the...
No. Okay, 11.
But on 11, on the first paragraph, under 4.3. I'm wondering whether we shouldn't explain sleep type at the bottom of the page, unless... When
you say that again, we can't hear, unfortunately.
Oh. I'm wondering if we cannot define fleet type at the bottom of the page unless the meeting is of the feeling that it can generally be understood.
Fleet type, I see it right there. It's in inverted commas. Do we see that there? The importance of leveraging procurement. The industrialization would be dependent on the shift from ad hoc procurement practices towards fleet type. You know, I must admit, when I first heard the word fleet, I had in mind a row of cars, buses, or, or trucks. Because, you know, you say the company's got a fleet, or the something's got a fleet. Then I realized as I listened, it meant a little bit more than just the fleet of buses or the fleet of cars. So I think, no, again, it is important that we do explain this a bit more. Coming back to the principle of accessibility. Thank you, Honourable Mabasa. We'll do that as well if you flag that. Yeah, right. I suppose we all know what crony capitalism is, do we? Did I hear no? Right, page 12. Professor Robbins, okay. I was just wondering who questions. It's Professor Roberts by the sound of it, huh? Am I right? He questions the government's decision to make coal-fired electricity, nuclear electricity, and defence aerospace. Central to the procurement strategy. He argues that these industries should be phased out for the reasons associated with climate change, environmental health, and safety, and moral anti-corruption challenges. The one thing I'm not sure of there, I think we all understand environmental health and safety. Can someone tell me what we understand by moral anti-corruption challenges? I know what moral means. I know what corruption means. But what does that phrase mean? Now, if we're going to start using this, we must understand what's in these reports. Can you explain this, Honourable Marais, to someone who asked you?
No, obviously this is a reflection of what Professor Roberts said, so we cannot defend what he said. It's just purely a reflection, and the only assumption that I make from that is that he said, you know, I mean, we must move away from these things that can pollute the environment, and that we must go to a healthy and a safety environment, and that from a moral point of view that there's, you know, for some reason he's associating, you know, coal and nuclear and these things with corrupt practices. So he, you know, he goes on this whole moral issue of, you know, going green and anti-corruption. That's the only assumption that I can make.
You know why I asked about this? it would be the same as saying to me, like, it's an anti-corruption. It's a something opposed to murder, and then you call it a moral of something opposed to murder. It's anti-corruption surely is a moral issue anyway. I don't know if you follow what I'm saying. It surely is. What is the difference between an anti-corruption challenge and a moral anti-corruption challenge? I mean, we've got an advocate here who can lend us his thoughts on the matter.
No, I really don't know.
Madam Chair, morality and the law don't always overlap. In this case, it most certainly does. So I don't think that the word moral is necessary there, unless he meant something else.
That's what I'm asking.
But I wouldn't know, because I wasn't here when he made the submission.
Well, we were all there, and we're equally perplexed. So, I mean, and we have people who got documents on this here as well. So, you know, I just think you're looking at something that is tautologous here. You know, so what we'll do, before we just drag it out and throw it out, we'll say to our researcher and content specialist, what is this? Can you justify the use of this? Or is it coming from his own document? Do you follow? Are you quoting? And if that is the case, put it in inverted commas. Can we leave our position there? Yeah, okay. Otherwise, we then move on. You're welcome to stop me at any point. I think we all know that, eh? 13. And now we've got purple. Is that still the committee? Good heavens, here comes Imperial Rome. It is such an imperial colour, isn't it? Leveraging. Leveraging procurement has economic growth value. If it incubates industries which may mature into economic viability and self-sustainability. So it's a reference to leveraging procurement. It's saying that it can have economic value, but only if, in a sense, if it incubates industries. Those industries which may mature. Are we then saying that the leveraging for procurement in industries that don't require incubation has no value? You hear what I'm coming to here? I don't think we disagree here that it will help, but surely it will help with all. Can I have comment, please, Honourable Marie?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think this is what is putting here is obviously an explanation, a broad explanation of what additional points of leveraging procurement can be. But obviously the whole emphasis of the submissions that we've had then from Itakwini, from Cape Town, from Busa, from Kusatu, was really this, you know, using levels of government, you know, in this regard, in this instance, municipalities, to leveraging procurement, local procurement. I tend to say that, you know, one can include Eskom there, but the sense of the point at that stage was certainly not to look at incubated industries and trying to get them from the ground. It's rather, how can Cape Town and Durban and Johannesburg stick together and procure together? That's not that everybody is buying buses from Brasilia, but that they do it together. That was the argument at that stage, and it was not really to foster, you know, small industries and try to incubate them and until they are ready, and then they can go on their own. I don't think that was the argument at all.
I certainly share that point with you there so far. Honourable Khadebi, Honourable Hajjaj.
Well, Honourable Chair, I think that the whole of that paragraph is very problematic. Actually, it goes to anti the spirit of which the delivering procurement is all about. Because it, say, it speaks about people who have done that, they have to pay back the state. If they, I think that it goes against the grain of what we're doing. So I think that to go on the safe side, we propose that we eliminate it out all together.
Honorable Hajjaj?
I think we need to separate the two. Leveraging procurement is something completely, should be something completely separate, and in the incubation of small enterprises is another issue. The small enterprises can be used in the procurement process, but it has to be separated. So we need to...
I think all of us are making very valid points along the line, so let's just hear the final one from Honourable Njikalana.
No, Chair, I'm fine. I'd rather make an input in the follow-up query if we're settled in this, whether it's similar or not.
Because I think it's quite clear that the idea was not to subsidize anything when we were making this point. Do you remember? We were saying, no, if you all get together, and I'm not going to repeat what the Honourable Khadebi is saying in that regard. You've also said something of value here as well, Honourable Maria, and I think, leverage procurement is not necessarily paying more. If you decide that this hospital will now buy X from here, that's a big order, that's leveraging procurement. Are you getting a subsidy there? No. So I think it's a little bit out of place just at this point, but I'm looking around as I say this. And yet on the other hand, I do understand what he was trying to say. He was talking about, you've got these infant industries. He was referring to that just now, the small things. And you know how government wants to promote it, and then there's a view that maybe we should subsidize, we should nurse, like any country, such small industries. And then how does this procurement thing come in then? Can you...
Madam Chair, I think that is in the wrong place of the report. Because currently where we are now, it's a report of the submission that we've had. And that part of this, that was never a part of the discussion.
Yeah.
If it is something extra that we want to put in and say, incubation of small business can also, benefit from leveraging procurement, by all means, and that can be an additional something. But not at this point of the report.
Are we all sort of happy to sort of flag it and move it out of this section and maybe come back to it later to see where there's a possibility of including the point in a different manner? Right. Then, of course, we do come on again to the Eskom's build program and other similar infrastructural development programs should be open. But I thought they were open to international tender. Yes, I'm going to start with Honourable Njikalana and come back to Honourable Hajjaj.
Chair, in fact, my immediate reaction was even to write next week to NIPP.
Yeah.
Because from my experience and from the last term, once you put in NIPP, the giants that come in there is Eskom, Telkom, Defence, Transnet, all big giants like that. So. And the reason why they are linked to NIPP is because unavoidably there has to be international tendering. I mean, if you want turbines, probably, I think, at the same time, we want to get them from the French, So, yeah. But if you are agreeable, it's just that I didn't pick up the paragraph above. Are we freezing all of it?
We're saying, look, two-thirds of that paragraph
legislative requirement of local procurement or leveraged procurement seems highly problematic as it would counter this, that, and the next thing. I think that still links to the infant industry sort of subsidized type of thing. But in between that, he spoke about the leverage. So what, perhaps let me just put it this way. Let's flag that one out of this area at the moment. Because I'll tell you why. There are just so many points there that are not directly relevant to what is here about the submission, you see.
Right.
And we won't throw it out. You know, when we throw something out that someone has contributed, we must have looked at it clearly. The person is not even here at the moment, so that also makes it very difficult. And that's why I say to people, when you put something in, be here to defend it. Yes, Honourable Hajjaj.
I have a problem with that second last paragraph on page 13. Now, it is true that we will tender, have international tenders for various components to grow our own state-owned enterprises. But I don't think that this government is keen to offer up the whole of, say, Eskom, for example, you know, to foreign tenders. Because I think what we need to look at that some of these things, Eskom, the utilities, are strategic to South Africa's security. We have a case in point with ISCO, that we hear the sitting with ISCO, which was and now we don't own ISCO. We have to buy our own steel that's made in our country from our iron ore at huge prices, especially now that we're in building infrastructure. So I think we need to learn a lesson from that. So I don't know how we're going to, and I don't think this last sentence, thereby abandoning the apartheid mindset of national utilities constructed as monopolies. I'm not happy with that sentence. We need to find something else.
Madam Chair, my view is that paragraph must not be there. That must be taken out. Totally. I think, you know, the fact that we've already said that it is anywhere open for international tender. So you know, I'm not quite sure what he wants to reach with that. And with that, with the other paragraph, that big one, it's only the first sentence that is really relevant, and that can be put on, you know, at the conclusions or at the recommendations. That is all. The rest is subjective explanations of a specific argument.
Now, I think we must agree on that particular point, but I'm going to emphasize again that when something is contributed and you do have a schedule in front of you, let's ensure that one is back here to add to it. Because unfortunately, then the rest of us have to remove it without the same insight as the person who drafted and crafted it. And it's regrettable, but that's what's going to happen. I think we can take a decision then on that, but we'll retain it. The points made on incubation and this kind of thing here and there and small and medium, and look at what may be utilized in that respect, okay? So those ideas we may wish to utilize later on in a conclusion. But when it comes to the Eskom issue, our position is already clear about, you know, the huge differences of opinion which are now in court between ArcelorMittal and Kumba and so on, and which the committee has already expressed a strong opinion on. So I think we just go right out. Right. Now, the red is ourselves, so let's read that with
can't disagree with what we've said. It's how we've worded it we may want to disagree. Do you see what we've written there? Page 14. There's one point there that I did ask the content specialist to flag myself. You may just want to look at it again. On that one, just about 4.3.1, where we say, I can't read all these little dots and bullets. Where is this? Read my own draft. The private should be encouraged through strategies that promote buying South African products. Such strategies should be linked to import substitution industrial development initiatives. So, do we want to say linked to import substitution? Or do we want to come back to where we are, industrial development initiatives?
There's only one word.
The last paragraph.
There's only one word that you can add in there. Such strategies should be linked to possible import substitution and industrial development initiatives.
Now, it's one or the other. That's the point. It's either we're going to say import substitution or we're going to say industrial development initiative.
Because IPEP is about industrial development. So that is, but import substitution links to a possibility of not importing the stuff but producing it here. In other words, that is a further emphasis of that. So that's why I said it's a possible import substitution. In other words, we manufacture it rather
and
ourselves.
Industrial.
And industrial development initiative.
I just want Ms. Herling to read something. Now, Ms. Herling, you're here to help.
My only concern is we're going to putting on import substitution, given our WTO membership, should we be saying that explicitly?
Well, you know, the thing is, we don't want to find ourselves unnecessarily walking the plank. No, but the reality is, no, it's not that simple. this is why we're saying we have many problems with the WTO. The reason other countries, I have to choose my words carefully now because one's on mic, but the reason other countries are able sometimes to work around the regulations and rules, if you like, is because they also choose their words more carefully. Let me not say more on the record.
But let me say on the record, I mean, we're not talking about subsidization. So we're not talking about subsidization. It is import substitution. And the direct meaning of that, in my understanding, is that where you would have imported a specific product, you say, no, let's rather see whether we can manufacture that in South Africa. That is import substitution. And, I mean, that is... Exactly. So that cannot be against WTO.
I also saw things a little like this, I must say, and I don't want to pretend I suddenly had a road to Damascus change. So I'm going to ask the researcher to comment before we add Honourable Hajjaj.
Thanks, sir. Import substitution, just to sum it up, it lends by doing, as in you do it yourself, you produce for your own country. Now, if you link that to WTO, WTO only specifies the issue of tariffs in order to protect your domestic industry. And according to WTO rules, it is allowed, but for a certain period of time, it can be 5 to 8 years. So it doesn't go against WTO rules. And then export orientation is the way you are becoming an export-led economy, where you export most of the things. So the balance here is, it depends on, it also speaks to the monetary policy issue, the exchange rate issues, depending on what is your monetary policy stance.
I think let's just come to a clear proposal. The committee is looking at the possibility here now of putting in both phrases. The question that we would want to be quite clear about, would this be within the WTO framework without, you know, finding ourselves jeopardizing anything?
Madam Chair, there is also a link to that last three words or four words, buying South African products. So there's nothing against promoting buying South African products.
Initially, before the 1994, before we became WTO member, we were import substitute. The country was an import substitute. But then because of liberalization and going, because WTO talks mainly about trade, liberalizing your industry, that's when we had to switch from import substitution to being an export oriented. But there's nothing wrong with import substitution. You are not protecting anything. All you're doing is you are increasing your manufacturing base by doing it yourself rather than exporting, importing outside.
The research position is quite clear. Here to advise us, Honourable Hajjaj.
I don't have a problem if that's what it actually means, that it won't be construed as a method of protectionism, that we are excluding or curtailing imports into the country. So that would be a form of protectionism.
Yeah.
So that's the only, if it means that this aspect of protectionism is not implied by that phrase, it's okay.
But I think then we must almost close off. I'll take Honourable Njikalana.
Yes, Chair, I support, probably could even say that possible import substitution where appropriate, but we should delink it from industrial development initiative, because in essence that's what the EPAP is about. In here we're focusing on import substitution, as I propose, where appropriate.
All right, I think we've taken a position. Should we find in some way we may have articulated it in the wrong manner, we will simply revise it to mean what we say. Okay. So we're now going to leave the word industrial development initiatives out. We're going to bring in what you said, Honourable Maria, about possible or something. It's there already. Do you see that? And then close off, it should be linked to possible import substitution. Are we initiatives? Or whatever. Let's just leave it, because now we're just dotting a few I's and crossing T's. 14. I don't see anything there. Page 15. Oh, we had a lot to say here. You know, we were talking a lot on Friday and the other day, hey? So it's all captured here now. The cost of capital remains a major concern. Indeed, it does. The IDC, in conjunction with other, etc., should be funding. In addition, government should consider the recapitalization. There was something else we also said. You see, it's one thing to recapitalize IDC, and it's another thing to tell them to go and do X, Y, Z. But we said this in one of our previous reports, we have to actually ask for its legislation to be reviewed, its legislative mandate, if you want it to change and be the animal you want it to become. Because its current legislation or mandate is slightly different. And we did put that in a recommendation last year, if I'm not mistaken. Or was it this year? But I'm just saying, right, okay, the second paragraph. You know, the researcher will quickly, hopefully, his hand will shoot up if we're saying something diametrically opposed to law. I'm sure your hand will jump up, won't it, there, Loazi?
Is it still on the case of cost of capital?
Yes.
Okay. I also want to add, well, would like to add something. The cost of capital as well as access to capital, because you may, even with the cost of capital, yes, because you may have, you find some in some institutes, in certain cases, a business can, with that cost of, can operate with that cost of capital, but because it doesn't have access.
Right, I think that's relevant. Concerns again around the financing had been raised, etc. The committee was of the view that private sector investment in the production sectors of the economy would be essential for the success of IPAP 2. I just want to get that quite clear in my head. Are we saying that if the private sector doesn't contribute, IPAP 2 will fail? That's what the word essential means. Another thing, you know, is you're saying it's absolutely essential. And I'm asking you that question. Honourable Khadej.
Honourable Shepherdson, it will not say, but what we're putting in for is that they must come to the party. That was the case. That's why we said that we even made a mistake by not calling the banking sector in, so that it can also be part of this thing, so that they, when coming to this capital land intensive project, really they must play their role. Yeah.
Could you hear
what we are coming from on this, the Honourable Marais?
Madam Chair, you can certainly choose or change the word essential, but I think the involvement of the private sector is very important. If you don't have that, you can't only rely on state procurement. Because, I mean, you know, who will invest in a manufacturing sector where the state can procure from? So it is actually essential.
I mean,
yeah. Exactly.
Any reason I'm saying essential is a word that really puts a whole new spin on it, because we've linked it to the word for the success. In other words, if they don't, this will fail. The success of IPAP 2. Do you hear what I'm saying here? Now, it's a very serious statement you're making. On the other hand, I would say it's critical. It's absolutely important. It's very important. But supposing they don't come to the party, Honourable Maria, Honourable Khadebi, just supposing, then we must pack up shop tomorrow. You know, yes, you see. Can we then move to no clear, hang on, what's this about future generations? Not that I'm involved, but Jesus, our children. That the future generation should not be excessively burdened, etc., etc.
I must admit that sentence, I feel a bit uncomfortable with. Because I mean, whatever you want to call it, if debt is a burden for the next generation, whether it's a small burden or a big burden, or you know,
And also the word, you know, preferably not the World Bank and the IMF, you know, that is very subjective. You know, if we sit in a position and we get can get the lowest cost loans from there, why should we go and borrow at a higher rate?
I'm going to come back after I've taken the committee to the researcher with a question. Honourable Khadebe?
Honourable Chairperson, I think that this issue was raised when it was referring to the loan which the ITC could make. It said that preferably they must raise the capital within the country. So I think that that part is misplaced there. Yeah, I think it can be that, because that one was linked to the ITC in particular.
So what you're really saying is you believe that possibly it should have been left closed at funding sources at this point, or what are you proposing just there, Honourable Khadebe? You know, because we've got the IDC earlier, the reference to that. And then we're saying, furthermore, the committee is of the opinion that future generations, and I'm, all right, we are going to look at that again, Honourable Maria, but just to complete that sentence, should not be excessively burdened financially by the implementation and that alternative funding, alternative development funding sources should be considered. You know, ask yourselves what we are saying and what we meant to say and what is the essence here. That's what this is, because otherwise we're going to go like this. I'll hear what you have to say, Honourable Hajjaj, and then I'll come back again here. Honourable Hajjaj?
Yeah, I think, first of all, that paragraph, that last word, I think, in my opinion, production sectors of our economy would be, I think, instead of the word critical, I think we should say necessary. I think that what critical is too strong for the success of EPAC 2. I think we should delete the next sentence. I think we should delete that next sentence. And then perhaps put in... I don't think we must write off the World Bank and IMF loans. Either not mention them at all, but I don't think we should have that stringent condemnation. Now, we don't have to explain why we don't want to take the loans or not to take them, or we want to take them. We just say we can look at alternative funding sources, e.g. the World Bank IMF loan, full stop. We don't need that, all that.
But I'm saying,
because
What they have said is that they go to other development finance institutions in the world where they are borrowing money from at low rates, from Brazil, from India. So this is just another form of, another alternative form of finance.
I'm not mistaken, Madupe, that's a World Bank. No, but you know, the question I want to actually ask the researcher, because as we all know, the World Bank has done quite a radical revision of this whole spectrum of conditionalities as a result of where it led many underdeveloped, developing countries. So let me just check with the researcher sitting at the back there. Yes, Ms. Namatlangu. There was a time when quite clearly the conditionalities there were excessively stringent. What is the situation now? Certainly one believes that this has changed quite dramatically.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the loans from IMF and World Bank, they still have these conditions, conditionalities attached to it. I think what has come up lately is the change in the term of the loan. Rather than calling it loan, probably the aid for trade. Now the question is it really aid towards trade, or is it just a term so that we adhere to the terms of this aid? In terms of conditionalities, they still exist.
Okay.
There's also the ODA, which is called Official Development Assistance. It also comes with conditionalities, and they spend 8 to 12, 30 years.
I think when we make loans, we also put the odd condition on. Honorable Hadebe, Honorable Hajjaj.
All right, Honorable Chair, I think that each and every loan will have a condition. You can go to the bank for a bond, you will have a condition. But I think what we're referring to here, it was the structural adjustment to which we had, and that's what we don't want to be involved in.
Honorable Spoker actually had up his hand there, and I overlooked him twice, my apologies.
No, Chair, I wanted to speak to that paragraph again and say what I said the last time. That after that the second sentence, the committee's also view that private sector investment in the production sector of our economy would be necessary for the success of the public. That is fine. Furthermore, the committee is of the view that we should seek further funding without necessarily borrowing from the IMF and the World Bank in order to avoid
I don't think it's a...
Honorable Kovac has not been able to say too much today because I ignored his hand.
Yeah, in order to avoid burdening future generations with a debt, perhaps what we should do is then to avoid mentioning the IMF and the World Bank and leave it at that.
So where do you want to leave it? What is your suggestion? I think that's really what we say. What is the suggestion?
I'm sure the function for borrowing money is anyway not that of DTI, that's of Treasury. So and I mean, you know, in other words, if we want to put in things like that, then we must go and find out what do they do at the moment? Because they borrow at the moment. And what are the conditions? So, you know, to go and put things like that in means that we want now to restrict them how they must, you know, get funds. And I don't think that is the objective, and I don't think that is the task of what we need to do with IPEF. I think, you know, the fact that we mentioned about alternative financing methods in terms of what we have discussed with IDC, that can be mentioned, but the moment that we become very particular in terms of what they should do and shouldn't do, then I think that is the task of Treasury, and it's a different ball game.
Yeah, I want to just stay with Honorable Kabbalah at the moment because he's already suggested we cut the take this out, take the next thing out. But what I'm understanding is that you're not saying we shouldn't seek alternative development funding. Am I right? You're not throwing or closing the door there. Am I correct there, Honorable Barton? You're saying, yes, we should do X and Y and Z, we should seek further funding. I want to hear clearly, are you suggesting we close the door on alternative to the IDC? In other words, we say only that, or we keep that door also open? Because I understand you to say you don't have a problem with further funding. But I'm just wanting to hear clearly, Honorable Barton.
You see, Chair, the point that I want to make is that we must not then, you know, change that into a wholesale application for loans from the IMF and the World Bank. I'm saying we must be cautious. And therefore, the focus must be looking for internal sources of funding, and that's what I'm looking for internal sources of funding.
I think now we're getting a better understanding. And you know what I'm going to ask you, Honourable Kovasa, is that so far we leave it at point, at that full stop, necessary for the success. When we come to furthermore, the committee is of the opinion, just think of it there for a moment in time. In pencil, just pin a couple of points there, because I don't think anyone would be opposed to looking for funds inside first. I mean, you know, no one's going to be opposed to that. And secondly, when necessary, also seeking funds from other alternative sources, that if you like, we can say, you see, I think it is important. It's all very well telling me that it's Treasury's job to borrow money. No. This is IPAC. It gets its money also indirectly from Treasury. Are we then saying it doesn't concern us? We must be concerned. So I'm going to ask Honourable Kovasa to work around that for a minute. Ask Honourable Mabasa for that frame and go to Honourable Hajjaj.
Thank you, Chair. I think I fully agree with Comrade here that we don't want to be dependent on the World Bank or the IMF. On the other hand, first of all, for instance, state-owned enterprises, all nine of them, according to the CMFA, have the right to borrow on its own. Right? It has that right. That is why the ESCOM deal went through ESCOM and not the Treasury. The Treasury was the guarantor, but it went through what you call. But I think what we should say here, to leave out all the names, World Bank and IMF, and just say, seek further, not necessarily internal, what does it mean? Does it mean only South African? Does it mean regional? Does it mean continental? Because we have DBSA, we have the African Development Bank, that is continental. So I think we should even leave out the word internal. We should just say, seek further alternative funding, full stop.
Well, there's only one problem that we're avoiding, and I don't want to resolve it now because I can see that we're going round and round. The first paragraph, no one had a problem, the cost of capital, okay? We breezed through that. The second thing, there are very, very many submissions which raise concerns about the cost of financing, the financing of IPAC 2. Are we going to be able to finance this effectively? Which is why the question is being asked in Parliament, in the House, and why ministers are responding to that in their speeches. So they wouldn't be responding to it unless, you know, they feel that there's a need to clarify this kind of issue. So I do think we can't get away with not addressing this issue of the concern about funding. I think we do have to address it. But how we address it, I think, is going to take too much time at this moment. So we're going to flag it. Honourable Mabasa, by now you should have got that phrase, please.
I do. The only difference will be if the meeting differs with me, but the phrase, because it's just the tabulating.
Okay.
On the tabulating part.
Page 3 is it?
Yes. On the tabulating, what I propose we tabulate is to say addressing inequities. And then when we go to the page that was referred to by Comrade Hajjaj, then we will then give more detail. Thanks, Comrade Chair.
We'll leave it for the moment, but I think what one was saying is what kind of inequities per se, like when we said financing, we said industrial financing. So we're going to leave it just at the moment. And we may all then just return and see how to leave it as it is for us to pursue what you are suggesting and leave it there knowing that it's going to be addressed further on, you know, as you say in the paragraph below. So we'll come back to that the same as Comrade Kwabasa's one, because we're on page 15 now, if I'm not mistaken, halfway through.
Can I make a follow-up?
Yes, yes, Honourable Babasa.
My follow-up is that in this area, I don't think it will be proper to lengthen it beyond addressing inequities. Because when we get to the 4.1, that the area of 4.1, that's where we will give detail. If I give detail here, which I can give, it will not be in step with what we are doing, you know, with the other bullets. You see, with the bullets that are there, all we are doing, we just listing. But if we give more than listing, then it will mean on this addressing inequities, we will have given more flesh, which I can give because I have been assisted to develop more flesh. So I would propose that we address it as at least addressing inequities, and then we leave it there. Then when we go to 4.1.1, is where we will give details. Thanks.
I think we've all captured the spirit of what was said then. I'm just going to call for a short 2-minute break. I think 2 minutes means we'll just help ourselves and walk back. I'm saying this because obviously a comfort break thrown in. But can we please proceed at speed to just help ourselves and come straight back?